Hey everyone, this is Dina Jones, one of the founders of Joe Bean Roasters. At Joe Bean, our mission, Coffee That Lifts Everyone, is about giving selling power back to coffee farmers, as well as purchasing power into the hands of our customers. Through our network of farmers, we're able to bring you naturally grown, amazing coffee directly. Our long-term farming partners negotiate pricing based on cost of production, as well as quality of product, not on fluctuating, unpredictable market prices. This enables them to create thriving businesses with bright futures. And our customers get empowered knowing exactly who grows their coffee and how, as well as knowing they are a part of a new, sustainable, global coffee network. To try our coffee, go to JoeBeanRoasters.com and be sure to check out our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription to receive a rotating selection of single-origin coffee delivered right to your door. Thank you to all our Rochester friends who have supported us and our farming partners so wonderfully over the years. You are making a difference with every bag.
I'm Chris Lindstrom, and this is the Food About Town podcast.
Rochester? Well, why Rochester?
Chris Lindstrom was a hoot. He was just so much fun. He never stopped talking. I mean, it was great.
Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
And we don't need any characters around to give the joint atmosphere. Is that clear?
Because I'm a pro. That's what pros do. I'm a professional. Look it up in the book.
But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
And we are back with another episode of the Food About Town podcast. For everybody that's listening, really appreciate you paying attention and listening to all of our Fringe Preview podcasts. It's been an absolute blast doing those, and hopefully you got out to a lot of Fringe events, so thank you for that. But today, I'm here with a classic Food About Town episode, and I'm here with a guest. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
I am Tim Cachette. I'm the owner and chef over at Avino, and me and my wife also own a couple of businesses downtown, La Bola, Frenchman Street, and also the Duke Event Space.
Yeah, so, I mean, if people want to go back and learn all the history, interviewed Tim a long time ago at Avino.
Yeah, I think it was like 2014 or something.
It was way, way, way too long ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So. And this is like, I'm also like making an effort to reach out to people I've known forever and like actually trying to talk to them either again or for the first time.
Yeah, I know I'm a lot grayer and a lot balder, and yes.
I resemble that remark, Tim.
Well, you know, age is a real bitch, so I would guess.
So kind of what I wanted to talk about is, so one, Avino's still kicking out in Brighton, Pittsburgh area.
Yep.
And I will say right away, just to kick off our conversation about that, is to this day, that is my, when somebody comes and asks me, I have a special event, I have this many people, and they have different, you know, preferences for dining, I'm like, I have like two places I ever send them to, and Avino is one of the two, and I've never gotten a miss.
Oh, cool.
I've never had a miss from that. And one, I got to say thank you for that, because one, it makes me look great.
I love that. That's part of my goal, is make you look good. So,
yeah. But that means a lot to me, that when I can recommend a place to somebody else, that they're asking like, hey, I have this special event and I know that you guys are going to crush it and that everybody's going to feel like they're taken care of. And to me, that's what Avino is like, you guys are dedicated to consistency, quality service, not being too pretentious, and it's a place that everybody can have a good time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was the goal when we set out. My wife was the one that actually started the place before I even got there for the first year. So, you know, it was, you know, the whole idea behind it was, you know, kind of almost having like a taverny kind of feel to it, but elevated. You know, Brighton's a very small little town, but we're right next to, you know, downtown. So, and the food's a little bit more eclectic than the first year that it was running, but I kind of like that. It moves around, and I think there is kind of like something for everybody. But, you know, we've been very lucky. I mean, come on, being around this long in the restaurant business is, sometimes you just don't realize how time like flies, and you're kind of like,
it really does.
Yeah. You're kind of like, oh my God, we've been doing this for like that long. I mean, I couldn't, you know, when we started, I was like, if we made it a decade, that would be pretty cool. I'm like, man, it kind of, it's already gone, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And also that has become like a real staple of the area. Yeah. And I think that's like, it's something that does matter, because just being present, just being there is a big accomplishment. Being still around and executing matters, and people depend on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a big thing for me too is I'm still, you know, this wasn't my first real career. I know we probably talked about this 12 years ago, but you know, I kind of pursued, you know, my passion to cook, and you know, that I still really enjoy it. I mean, like I get kind of bummed out if I don't cook every day, and I think that really helps the energy and, you know, how it's not stagnant, and I think people can feel that it's, you know, somebody is driving, you know, the ship there that's still kind of, you know, interested in the food and cares. But, you know, that's, we're very, very, very lucky. But, you know, at the same time, I always say this, I've taken my passions, you know, this was my hobby, and I worked really hard, and so did my wife. But, you know, I've basically monetized just being around the things that I like. I like my job and like what I do.
Yeah.
I really like my wife, so I get to spend all day with her. And our dog is with us all the time. So I'm like, I just kind of monetized being around the things that I like, and created kind of an environment that I can do that, you know, quasi successfully, I guess. So.
Yeah. Well, and that's something we've been actually talking about a lot recently, is compromise and the choices that come with doing a different following of your passions, right? Like having a passion for cooking, there are so many ways to go after that, especially now, like with all the information that's out there about, you know, home cooking and techniques and the availability of everything. All the information's out there. Like, you can be a passionate home cook and do all the things.
It's great. I mean, there's so much information that people can rely on. You know, I started this very late in my life. I started cooking professionally when I was 28, and I'm deep into my 40s at this point. But, you know, I didn't grow up with a family that worked in, you know, the restaurant industry. I didn't go to culinary school early or any of that, those things. Would I see the kids now? They're like, you know, if they're making staff meal now, it's like they flip open and look on Google.
Yeah.
And they can find like a, like, you know, an okay recipe. When I was younger and, like, you know, the person that owned the place asked me to make the staff meal, which is basically something that, like, you know, one of the kitchen staff once a week basically has to cook for everybody, because we don't want people to go into service hungry, or, you know, it's going to be hard for them to focus, all that stuff. So we kind of like,
it's also really camaraderie too.
Yeah.
Like that being present for each other is a big part of that, because it can be, it's a lot.
And there's also, you know, there's things to use up in the kitchen. There's things that, you know, hey, what are we going to do with this? We can make it for staff meal, but back in the day, you were kind of just like left to your own devices and kind of like, you know, tearing your hair out. Like, what am I going to do with all them today? They just like flip open the thing, and just like 30 seconds later, I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, that's not, you know, the people I came up with, it kind of uses as an exercise to be creative. And what they're doing now is fine too, because it's still, you know, feeding the staff, and that's the most important thing. But
yeah.
But now I think it's, you know, you don't have that puzzle to figure out anymore. They're just kind of like, Google. And then they're like, I'm like, all right. I got to come up with a better exercise, yeah. I guess. So.
I mean, I kind of enjoy, like, I agree with you in many ways. Like, I enjoy the process of, all right, I'm just going to see what I want to cook today. And I don't think about it too much anymore. And it's so weird. Like, my wife just went and visited one of her friends in Pennsylvania. And she was talking about how challenging it was to try to teach mm-hmm. somebody else who is like anxious about cooking. And it's weird. Like, I've gotten so far past anxious that I don't think about it much anymore.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, I have flavor. I'm just going to use a flavor and then just decide what I'm doing on the fly,
right,
and figure it out and taste and season.
Sure.
But I don't make dishes anymore. I just make food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a very, I love that idea though, that like still that people are looking up recipes and trying different things.
Yeah.
And you hope that, hey, you're going to take that. Maybe you tried this Moroccan thing. Maybe you tried this, you know, tried this dish from Yemen, and you're like, oh, well, lem salta. Okay, well, we tried that, and now maybe we can use a technique from that and do something else.
And I, you know, that's always the hope, you know, that really is, because I, you know, we try to create an environment, especially at Avino, like, you know, it's, you know, I know the creative aspect of it is really under my charge, but I really try to keep it as collaborative as possible.
Yeah.
I like ideas from everybody. You know, I don't care where a good idea is a good idea. So I like that, and I keep it kind of loose there. I kind of like that, you know, we're all joking around and we're kind of all on the same page. And I think that also helps to the longevity that we've had people work for us. You know, the guy that runs the kitchen when I'm not there, which is right now, Sean, he came with the building. My wife hired him before I actually took over the job. And, you know, we have kids that I basically hired out of high school that are still with me.
Wow.
And, you know, the other guy that's there, he's been with me for 5 years. The people that opened up, you know, Gus, who's over at Lobola down at the Sibley building, he's been with me 5 years as well. And, you know, I saw a lot of myself in him, and I really trusted him to go and kind of, you know, start that restaurant. And for me to be able to, like, support people in these other roles and these other, you know, restaurants that we have and counter service places that we have is great. Jason, who runs Frenchman Street the day to day, I was going to open up Frenchman Street without him. He walked in the door and was just back from New Orleans. He's his partner at the time. They just had a kid. They moved up here for her family's from up here. And he was kind of like, Janine's like, I just got this resume from this guy in New Orleans. He was working at a place at Toops, which is actually pretty.
Oh, yeah.
So he worked for Isaac and.
Fascinating guy.
Yeah. He worked for Isaac and Amanda for years. And so did his partner, Courtney. They ran North and South. So Courtney works for us on our catering team.
Wow.
And, you know, he came in and he's like, yeah, I worked with Isaac too. So I was just like, I didn't really have a job at the time for him. I was like, well, I am opening this place downtown. And I'm like, I'm kind of opening this New Orleans place. And I kind of wanted to kind of like smoke meaty place. And I'm like, would you be interested in like, I'll hire you here. We'll work together for like a year. And then you can help me kind of get it on its feet. And that was just like a serendipitous like situation. That was just like, you know, and, you know, we go down to New Orleans and, you know, we've met the Toops a couple of times now. They like our dog really well. He goes with us everywhere. But, it was just, it worked out really well. But to give him the platform to kind of do what he wants to do and what Gus wants to do over at Lobola, you know, I helped write the initial menus. But at a certain point, I'm very happy that I've kind of got to the place in my career that I can still cook every day and I have that, but I can be the support system for people that might not be able to express themselves in that way.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like having the hand on the back of the bicycle. Like, I'm there for you, whatever you need, but I kind of want you to creatively do what you want to do. And is, we talk about what, you know, the direction the food is and what should be on the menu to appeal to the most guests, but to be able to get to that place is cool. Is fulfilling in itself.
Well, and I think that's also a testament to that's culture top to bottom. That's not just, it's not the moniker of culture that is often used. It's like, oh yeah, we have such a positive culture.
Right.
That comes with when you mention like, oh, this person's been here for 5 years and then had an opportunity to do this thing. That's the testament to culture, not the words.
Right.
The fact that there are people there for 5 years that are still content to be there. That is culture. Cause you don't, especially in this industry, 5 years is
a long time.
Is a lifetime for a lot of things.
We've definitely, I've interviewed a lot of people. They're like, yeah, usually, you know, you can see on their resume, they're like someplace for like 6 months. I'm like, I don't know if that's really going to work for us, you know? And we like to promote within. And if somebody has a passion, whether it being a dish or they have a long-term goal, I know, I don't want to speak for Janine, but I'm pretty sure she'd be on my, she would agree with me that if we're able to do something to help them, we're going to do it. I mean, we have, people that, you know, might not necessarily be in the food community. They might, like, you know, we've had people that wanted to get into, flower, I guess I don't really know, like designing of flowers and stuff. I'm like, oh, we know some people and then we can get you an introduction, kind of like what we were talking about earlier. And then, if somebody, hey, I'm thinking about opening up a cool bar that doesn't, I'm like, well, it's not something we don't really into, but we can help you with the process and we'll support you. And if there's anything we can do. So that's been cool too. I mean, we know we've seen a lot of, employees that we've had really, you know, not just with us, but like they've moved on and, we're still very, very friendly with them and we still support each other. One of our, employees that used to serve for us, Jessica Klein, opened her own event venue called the Highline that is down the street from the Sibley building. And then Zach and Athi Graham, who opened up the Arbor venue. Zach worked for us for a while, I consider them friends, but, we've known these guys for a while. And, you know, it's kind of cool to see these guys just kind of like juggernaut into their own like little stratosphere. So
yeah, no, it's really cool. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about is like, you know, that growth, you know, cause I did just look, it was 2014 when we did that last. And I kind of want to talk about all the new places in the Mercantile.
Sure.
Because it is such an interesting, it's such an interesting space that I know when I first walked in there, when it was under development, we were actually part of like what was High Tech Rochester and, the incubator upstairs. Mm-hmm. So we were walking through that space completely empty.
Yeah.
And we walked through it a lot.
Yeah.
And we saw it and we're like, oh yeah, there's a lot of opportunity here. And then walking through it the first time, I'm like, oh, okay. How is this going to progress? How is this going to go? And I think part of what has, you know, what's turning it into where I think it's going to end up is the influence from you guys, you know, and I love that my buddy, Yunjir Yan's in there doing Seasons Noodle now. Yeah. Like what a genuine guy. Yeah. I love him so much.
He seems very, I've met him a bunch of times. We have like these little staff meetings once a month with the different operators. Seems like just the sweetest guy in the world. So we're excited to have him on the team. It's great. You know, and that's what it should be. It's we're trying to, all the different operators are really trying to come together to lift up the space. So,
yeah.
But yeah, when you probably walk through it, I know, you know, that space in itself in this, the Mercantile, the Sibley building, it was, when it was renovated. And I think when they started those, this place that was Lobola before was a place called, I think, Rufus. And then they, I think it was just bad timing. I think they, the pandemic just happened and they were trying to like, get this thing off the ground. And, I think, you know, they had just a couple of false starts just because of the timing of, it was the middle of the pandemic. So things didn't really work out the way they wanted. The building owners approached Janine and myself, just because we've been around for a while and, you know, I think we had a relatively good reputation in the community. So, and they wanted us to, quarterback this, this revival that they were kind of looking for down there. And, you know, it's an interesting space. You know, the first year that we were there, people would walk by and they would think it was a hotel. And it's kind of like, you know, they were like, what is that? And I'm just like, there is still a little bit of a learning curve with that. We are really able in the last, Lobola is going to be, I can't believe to say this, 4 years, I know, it's incredible, right? So, and I couldn't be, we really still have the, we still have the opening team there. Like we haven't.
Yeah,
like,
I've seen a lot of the same people.
Yeah. It's what you said before. I think that really is a testament to not just Janine and myself, but I think to them and seeing that from 4 years ago and seeing the growth that they've had has been fantastic. And but we've really captured the downtown audience, at least from my view of people that work downtown, which is great. We're still trying to really capture the people that live downtown, not just people in the building, but there are people there that I think are still kind of figuring it out. And I, you know, that might be a larger conversation of the state of downtown. But, you know, we knew that this was going to be, when I decided to do this, and Janine, I think, would agree with me as well. I knew this was going to be a long-term commitment. This wasn't anything that was going to be like, 9 months, we're cool. Like, this is going to be a long-term thing for us.
Yeah, and it's part of the changing of what that area is, mm-hmm. too, is making the space dynamic. And it's not to say that, like, all the original participants were the wrong choice.
No, I think it was really a timing issue, really, like I said.
I think it was tough. I think it was really difficult for a lot of them to, one, get the word out, also during
a pandemic. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it was really hard to get the word out about something like that, where you need the density of people. You need the voice of people saying, oh yeah, we're going to meet here before we go to this place. Mm-hmm. That's also lively in the same area. Mm-hmm. Right. You know what I mean? It's like that whole thing. So what I did want to do is let's talk about the individual places.
Sure.
So Lobola is what I would call approachable Spanish?
Yeah, I would say like Spanish Mediterranean. When we started out, my first menu was like so Spanish. And I loved it.
To be honest, I'm also working through that right now. I've been consulting on a place opening in Victor.
Oh, okay.
So it's a brewery that's going to have 150 seats, 10 barrel brew house, and the owner lived in Spain for 5 years.
Okay.
Called DeWolf Brewing. And, you know, I was concepting the menu, and really it's like gastropub with hard Spanish influence flavors.
Sure.
With some traditional tapas things.
Yeah.
But it's a tough balance, especially since still there's so little awareness of Spanish food here in town.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been saying, you know, if somebody asked me even 10 years ago, they're like, well, what, you know, I think I had a little bit of a history of living in Italy and working there for a while. So they're like, would you think about opening up an Italian restaurant? I'm like, not really, but I would be very interested in opening up a Spanish restaurant, just because, and I know there's a lot of, not a huge amount of awareness, but like, if you can be into Italian food, like that is not a quantum leap in food styling in comparison, like olive oil, garlic, you know, parsley, you know, like these things are very, you know, ubiquitous between like the cultures. And I just never thought that was a huge sell, but people are kind of like, they just don't know a whole lot about it.
Yeah, it's still new here, and mm-hmm. that's okay, right? It's
absolutely.
And I think it takes a deft hand. And that's like when I was concepting, I've been really focusing on that. Like, how do we make it approachable while not dumbing it down?
Correct.
And it's kind of the constant battle of, yes, introducing people to that, because mm-hmm. we've had little fits and starts.
Sure.
Of Spanish flavors in town, but
there has. I mean, for the first year, people were like, "So where's the guacamole?" I'm like, "Okay, I got to show you a globe." I mean, like, you know, so that's not. And that definitely happened one time. It was great. We had we were doing like the Spanish style, like they wanted a wedding, and one of the individuals planning the wedding, we were going on and on about like, you know, different tapas and pinchos and like what are little sandwiches and mm-hmm. having like an Iberico hand, like, you know, and that was really a lot of the original concept of Lobola in the beginning. You know, there was like tinned fish, and which they still do, but like, you know, and there was Iberico, and it was like, you know, all this Serrano ham and pinchos and all this tapas, and it was great. And it's evolved a little bit beyond that. You know, there's still paellas, and but it's a lot more seasonal and a little bit more Mediterranean. And I feel like he just needed a little bit of, he being Gus, a little bit more of a wider berth to be able to do a couple of different things outside of just being like, I mean, when I conceptualized it, it was Barcelonian, like up the wazoo. And it was, and I even took, you know, Lobola is actually one of my favorite restaurants in Madrid, which has been open for like 300 years. And I was like, you know, when I said, I was like, well, what's the name? And I'm like, well, it's going to be called Lobola. And, Janine did not like that. I was just like, I'm like, you got to hear it out. I love the place. It's a place where like the matadors used to go and eat after, you know, a bullfight. And it's just, it's exactly kind of, I kind of dig it. So, but yeah, I mean, in the beginning that's what it kind of was. But you know, as time evolves, you know, I gotta let, you know, I have to take my hand off that training, you know, off the training wheels of the bike there. And I gotta let him kind of like grow and make it, you know, be what it is.
So. Yeah. And I, that hybridization too, right? I think that's where letting the customers drive it a little bit, right? And it's that, like I said, it's the constant battle of, you never want it dumb.
Correct.
And dumb and approachable often merge together. And I think that's the biggest challenge with passionate nerds like ourselves, yes, about food and drink, is how do we do both? How do we not feel like we're, you know,
like selling out, or yeah, like, yeah,
and
no,
it's selling out. So it's a weird confluence, right? Like, right. And it's the constant struggle of, I have purity in many of my thoughts about food, mm-hmm, and drink, but in the end, you also need to be open.
Yep.
You need to stay open.
Yep. We have to pay the employees. We have to pay our vendors. And I have to be cognizant of that. You know, I can't agree more, but you know, the problem I have is I have to live with myself at the end of the day. And I definitely got into this not to be, and there's nothing wrong with this, but I'm, you know, if I'm not going to be your chicken French guy. Like it's, and that's cool. Like there's lots of cool, like chicken Frenches out there or whatever it is. But, you know, I have an idea of what I wanted to do, and that's what keeps me interested and keeps me motivated. I trust me, in every other area of my life, I can become very lazy. I'm not lazy about this because I'm self-propelled because I'm interested. And if I'm not interested, it's gonna trickle to the guest eventually, yeah, that I don't dig it. So
for sure. Yeah. And that's where I also like, I like that person is also getting their excitement out of, yeah, maybe this is how we fuse it. Maybe this is, you do that with respect, with intention.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's the big thing, is it has to be on purpose.
It has to be, if it's not coming from within you, at least for me, it just doesn't work. It just, you know, this is a hard business, you know, there, and I could tell you all about, you know, the woes of the restaurant life, and you know, yeah, increasing food costs and payroll tax, and you know, all, oh, blah blah blah.
Never stops.
Oh God, you know, and like we said this earlier, it's like, you know, we don't want to lose money. It's like, you know, making money is not the easiest thing to do in this whole thing. But if you're just kind of doing it to do it, and also kind of sold your soul to, you know, I'm just, I can, you know, the Verizon store is hiring, I'm sure. So I mean, yeah, like I don't, you know, I can go work for a large supermarket chain that lives in town. I mean, I guess I could do that too, and have a lot more stability and time off. But you know, I sacrifice this time and effort and kind of beat myself up about it because I, you know, at the end of the day, I love it. I mean, you know, and I really believe that. I mean, like, you know, if you're just kind of doing it for the money or notoriety, like for me at least, like my interest and energy is going to be quite finite. If I genuinely are in enjoying it, and I am interested and I love it, well, love's infinite. I'm infinite with, yeah, with love. I have so much energy then. So,
well, and I think that's the other thing too, is like when you make a choice to not just do the one thing, right? It has to be a thought. It has to be not just a thought, it has to be a complete thought. Cause otherwise you're like, then you're kind of in the wash, right? You're like, oh yeah, I'll figure it out on the fly. It doesn't work when, right, you already have a home base. You already have, you know, the new outpost there, adding on Frenchmen, right? Mm-hmm. And making that choice and then adding a venue on top of that. Like when you were thinking, you know, I know there's opportunities because of the vacancies, but when the opportunity came up, was that like, oh yes, I know what I wanted to do. It seems like that was the answer.
Oh, I went home after the conversation with the building owners. I wrote the menu for all three of them. Like,
yeah.
And I also knew I outgrew, we do a lot of offsite catering, and we do a lot of catering. And I just knew that the infrastructure of the Sibley building was going to offer me a lot more square footage to do that. So,
which is huge, by the way, for anybody that doesn't, like, if you're thinking about like one, like the Kitchen Avino is not a huge kitchen.
No.
It is like a mid-size at best kitchen.
It is, yeah, 15 tables in a private dining room downstairs. It was, until we went downtown, it was, we were, you know, I was running it like my, my family runs is in a manufacturing business, and they would used to have like an A, B, and C shift.
Yeah.
Like going 24 hours. I'm like, I had to run it like that. I would have people come in at 6 a.m. and leave at 11, and then people come in at 11 and then work. And then I would have another shift while we're in service, do more prep while we were downstairs in our prep area. I was
That's
like,
wild.
I'm like, I can't, there was just no space for refrigeration. No. So, you know, and obviously, you know, we love the restaurants. I love Avino, obviously, but, you know, what we were also trying to do is, create some stability, monetarily. You know, obviously, at Avino, we're very, very busy through, you know, the fall through the spring, but a lot of our customer base is like 30s, 40s, and 50s, and a lot of them go out of town, you know, are on vacation, you know, especially in Brighton. So we kind of got into the event game, which kind of, you know, weddings are running through the summertime and stuff like that, just to kind of keep the cash flow going. So
it raises the floor. And I think it's one of those things that is wildly, wildly misunderstood.
Yeah.
Like when people think about what are the economics of these things, like events are the thing that raises the floor that allows you to keep the doors open, because otherwise a lot of places, people don't understand, a lot of places would not be open without events.
Oh my God.
Especially the bigger events.
If you're just waiting for the people, especially, you know, hoping, you know, we're lucky enough. We've been established. We've been around, for a while at Avino. So, you know, very, you know, reservation based, and we're very fortunate to have a great customer base, but, you know, just hoping in banking on the guarantee of that revenue coming in, is a dangerous thing. And what you'll find is you have kind of like this, I always call it the revenue, like kind of like a roller coaster that you're mm-hmm. playing. So by introducing events, which are for the most part, very planned, you know exactly what every individual is going to be getting. There is, you know, when you're going into a restaurant, it's chaos. You don't know what an individual is going to order on it. They could be ordering, they could be splitting a burger four ways. They could get seven courses. You don't know. So, you know, trying to, you know, streamline that revenue stream into something that's a little bit more flat and consistent by introducing events, was something that was very interesting to me in my background. Going downtown and having that infrastructure of that was very appealing to me. And then, you know, the food part, once again, I was talking about Avino, how it's like, you know, I've monetized my passion. I love Spanish food. We spent a lot of time in Barcelona and Madrid. And then, you know, I spent a lot of time in New Orleans, too. Janine and myself got married in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, I always kind of was like, well, I would love to do kind of like a New Orleans kind of thing. So once again, monetizing my, you know, my own self-interest. But I think that's a good thing in the fact that I'm interested in it and I'm passionate and I want these things to succeed. And like I said, if it was just to do it and like I was kind of half in it, like my interest would be very finite with that. So
well, and I think it also like having that amount of diverse offerings also mm-hmm. diversifies your event offerings
exactly
in a way that the capabilities, not just the capabilities, but the practiced capabilities of the staff to produce all these different genres of food on a regular basis, that means that your level is going to be higher.
Like, yeah, we're very lucky with that. You know, Avino has been kind of like running, you know, is a contemporary American restaurant, but if anybody's ever been there, you can see it is not an Italian restaurant. It's not a French restaurant. It's, we're dealing with a lot of local farms, but you know, Janine and myself, we travel a lot. So, you know, and I just love all different types of food and like introducing that in and out of the menu. So there's anything from Spanish to like, you know, Vietnamese to North African to whatever. But the huge attribute that we have, especially with events, you know, we have a catering menu that, and we have a catering head, Sean Wolf, who I think has been on the podcast as well.
Yeah. Sean's a beast.
Sean's great. And, you know, he's an adult and he's been with us for a while now, you know, and I'm just very fortunate to have this staff of veteran people that are still very passionate about cooking, but, you know, they've also graduated beyond going out and drinking their faces off and waking up on a stove. So I know that they're coming in the next day and they're adults and I love that. But, you know, the attribute that we have for events is if somebody likes something at Avino, we can do that on this menu or any past menu. If they like any of the stuff at La Bola, that's also available to them. Frenchman Street as well. If they're, you know, if they want, fried turkey necks, we got it. Beignets or, a smoked chicken salad. But then we have a full catering menu. So there is, you know, it's a very diverse field culinarily that we can offer a guest and do it, as you're saying, like at a high level, I hope.
Yeah. So what I'm kind of wondering, you know, as we're wrapping up, I kind of want to talk about when you're actually deciding to open, you know, the Duke as a venue, when you're thinking about how to, you have a blank space, how do you think about laying that out? I kind of want to get into the weeds a little bit because sure. that there's a lot of decisions that were made to choose how to make that space a whole,
yeah.
right? How do you, I kind of want to walk through that because like you have the opportunity to take that space, turn it into an active event space, obviously building the infrastructure, mm-hmm. you know, around that for the bigger stuff, either on-site or off-site. But there's a ton of decisions that go into what is this venue going to feel like?
You know, when we got into the space, it's unlike the other event spaces around the area, which are absolutely beautiful. Like, you know, the Arbor Midtown, gorgeous space. Arbor Loft, gorgeous space. The Highline, gorgeous space. You know, when I looked at the Duke space or just the space it has some pillars. It looks onto the DNC building.
Yeah.
So, and the way that the Sibley building was constructed, there are these huge metal pipes going next to that window that looks onto the DNC building. And there was just no way to logistically get it out. So then the first thing we thought was like, well, we'll make it raised and we'll make it a stage. We're like, okay, so this will be an event venue. And then we can also make it a jazz fest venue. And Mark Iacona, you know, we've been working with for the last few years, and the Duke being a, you know, having two events a night during Jazz Fest has been awesome. And, it's been great just being a part of Jazz Fest, which we've really amped up in the last couple of years. But, you know, I knew it was never going to be, nor did I want it to be, kind of like this white kind of chrysalis of elegance. I just knew it was going to be a little bit more metropolitan, and I was cool with that.
You didn't want it austere, because I know in a lot of ways that is what a lot of current design
it is.
Has been. And I think it's finally springing back.
I kind of wanted it a little gritty in the fact that, like, I just knew I couldn't, and it's not a competition. I just, like, I could never make this look like what those places are going to look like. And by the way, they all, you know, there's a lot of them around there, and a lot of them are similar looking. I'm just kind of like, well, I kind of want to be different. So I kind of went, like, you know, the CBGB's route. I was like, you know what, I would be cool. And that's why it's called the Duke too. I mean, we needed something that was, we were tossing around names and everybody's like, you know, they wanted it something Rochester. I was like, well, one of the things that, you know, Rochesterians have really latched onto is, the arrest of David Bowie in the early 80s. So I was like, well, I kind of want that early 80s New York kind of vibe here. And, you know, Bowie was called the White Duke. So I was like, we'll just call it the Duke. Let's just do that. And then, you know, you get into the bathrooms and, you know, they're black and, like, you know, our friend Stacey Kay helped us kind of like design that. But, you know, there's like pictures of like Run DMC and like Bowie and Biggie. You know, there's kind of like a music vibe to it. But, you know, it's definitely not things that you would find at a different, event space. But we kind of wanted it that way. We wanted it kind of like a little bit more relaxed feel to it, and kind of had a little bit more of that like New York kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, it's that it's a place that, you know, lives in the city, right?
Right.
It's not,
I want, you know, I think that there wasn't a place kind of like that. I kind of liked that. I was like, yeah, it's cool. We've done a bunch of music events and in the space, and you know, it can fit like 3 to 5, you know, the fire marshal says 500 people, I don't know about that, 350 people, yeah. I'm happy with. But, you know, it's got a cool bar that actually my buddy Paul built. And, you know,
because it's a fascinating layout, too, of a bar, too.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then we have like these pictures in the background. It worked out great. But I'm just having that as a the infrastructure for offsite catering, too, and for Labola and Frenchman Street as a prep area, but also springboarding that to having more people in the space for the Duke and introducing them. You know, a lot of people that walk in there are still getting used to the Sibley building, the Mercantile, and too. So I'm just like, when they come in for an event there, everyone's kind of like, what is going on in here? Like, you know, so which is kind of awesome too. So
I think that's the reaction you want, right? When you have the opportunity to bring them in either to, you know, to a counter service at Frenchman, to, you know, to a nice bar or seating area in the, you know, in the lobby, essentially lobby kind of area of the Merc, you know, for Labola, and you can have that experience that is easy and quick, but still feels like you're being served.
Correct.
And then you have an event space all in this same area. Like, you really have a lot of opportunities to introduce people to what new downtown
could be,
can be.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what I want to leave on, is that's like, that's the thing. Right. If anything else, like if we all take a step back, having things that people want to go do downtown that are approachable, that's not exclusive for anybody. Like, you can go in and get a good meal for a reasonable price.
Sure.
Right. This is not, you don't have to go to the heights of high dining to get high quality stuff and enjoy what, you know, what you and the team do.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. I mean, you know, we're very fortunate in that fact too, but you know, introducing people that are on the go that can go eat there, and you know, you can go to Labola and have, you know, a 3-course meal and drinks and all that stuff. If you're, you know, Jason over at Frenchman Street, we're also open for breakfast. So, you know, we're trying to kind of hit that market of kind of like, you know, we're doing breakfast at Frenchman. Both places are open at lunch, and then Labola is kind of open at night.
Yeah.
Just to kind of serve that community, because, you know, people love breakfasty kind of things in the morning, and they need to, you know, they need to eat something. And
who's to complain?
Nobody's going to complain about, you know, smoked brisket and eggs and such. I mean, nobody's going to do that. So, you know, introducing those people to that is fantastic. And then, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, we've done many events where people kind of like do like a cocktail hour in the Labola Frenchman space, and then they walk into the Duke space, and then they're having more of a formal dinner. So you can kind of have like that, you know, kind of like cool, funky vibe that we have in the Mercantile with, like, you know, the wallpaper being kind of cool and kind of like this not weird, but like a really cool kind of like downtown vibe. And then you can kind of have a little bit more of a dark kind of moody kind of thing going in the Duke space. So, you know, it's been great. You know, we're fortunate. Everything's been, you know, booking out for the rest of the year, and you know, hopefully we can keep on that trend too. So
that's awesome. I mean, seriously, congratulations. Like, I'm always very heartened to see when people who I respect are doing things that are continuing to grow their message, continuing to grow the actual culture of doing good to their people, doing good to the industry. Well, it means a lot to me.
It's a team effort though. I mean, there's no, you know, I couldn't do it without all these individuals who I've known for a long time. And, you know, I, you know, genuinely love and, you know, respect them. But, you know, hiring people and having people in your life that are genuinely good people and have the same vested interest, that takes about 80% of the, you know, the BS out of the situation. You know, so if they're all, we always kind of say, it's like, you know, on the boat or off the boat. If you're on the boat, then you're on the boat. But like, if you're, that's fine. You can go do whatever you want. But I think, you know, we've been very fortunate with the long term employment with a lot of our staff that they are on the boat. So,
yeah. Well, if you want to get on the boat, make sure you go visit all of the different places under the Avino umbrella. So that's Avino over in, Brighton, Pittsford area. Sure. Make sure to go visit La Bola and Frenchman Street in the Mercantile on Main. And if you need an event, you can book it at the Duke. Make sure you do it ahead of time because it's going to take some time to get there. But you can make it happen.
Yes, and we'll see you at Jazz Fest this year. And yeah, we look forward to the future. So it's great.
Sounds good. Tim, thank you so much for coming over.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Also, for everybody listening, make sure you check out all the other shows on the Lunchador Podcast Network. I would recommend you check out a couple of our newer shows, Murphy's Rank the World, a bunch of episodes out with three siblings doing chaotic ranking of anything and everything. Also want you to check out Common Thread, which is my friend Rory Van Grohl from Ugly Duck and his compatriot Greg Benoit from the Irondequoit Public Library talking about how hardcore music has changed their lives as adults.
Damn.
What a fascinating discussion. So thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next time with more on the Food About Town podcast. Thanks for listening to the Food About Town podcast. If you aren't already subscribed, what are you waiting for? Go to your podcast app of choice and make us your favorite podcast by subscribing and leaving a review if you can. Music for the podcast was created by the fabulous Taurus Savant. You can hear more of his work at taurussavant.bandcamp.com and make your presence known by seeing him perform live. Food About Town is a proud member of the Lunchador Podcast Network. Oh no, here comes McKenneth!
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Gumbo, one of the best foods that has ever been created. Such a melting pot dish. Go get some.